This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2017, held at Faith Builders on August 1 through 4.
Good morning. Try that again. Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, okay, it's coming. I think we'll get started here. Welcome back again. I thought maybe a whole bunch would choose the other session if they wanted to, but I welcome you here. Anyway, I've been amused today, and a couple of things have, obviously this topic's running around in my head quite a bit, and so I'm conscious of a lot of things that are happening, and just I'm kind of evaluating them as I go along. But could you all get your pen and... does that irritate you at all? How many of you that irritates you in your class? Who are the clicker haters? How many of you? This is fine. Oh, excellent. I am just, you folks, I bless you. I thought it when we did the choral arrangement there with the binders. How many of you binders opening and closing irritates you? Okay, so we're all a little together on some of these things. I think I commented this past year that we have one class that's notorious for some of these things. Bless their hearts. And I can go into that classroom. It's like, I wasn't in a bad mood, but now I am. And it's like, wow, what is it with me? You know, and obviously there's a lot of personal factors that can affect my tolerance level for these kinds of things. But there comes a point where you just say, okay, if I hear one of those things click again, I'm confiscating the pen and giving you one that doesn't. And I think that's probably a good solution, just to ban those from your room if it becomes too much of a personal issue for you. Well, welcome back again. We talked a little bit about some of the foundational things as we think of understanding ourselves as teachers. We talked about the fact that we have to be honest about who we are and recognize some of those things. And I'll come back to that. Probably I'll refer to that a number of times, just keeping that in our forefront, in our thoughts. We talked about the fact that we have to recognize our motives, our motives in improving, keeping, evaluating that. Is this something that we're doing just as a personal agenda, or is it something we're doing to glorify God? What are our motives in doing in this change? We talked about the fact that we need to recognize that we are not a be-all and end-all within ourselves. We need each other. I believe one of the reasons God created us with limitations is for us to understand our need for each other. And I think we just have to wrestle with that and accept it. That's just who we are. And the sooner we do that, I think the sooner we can use our differences to actually make something really powerful and come together as a team wherever we are in our schools and really grow things beyond just what our own individual capabilities would be. I would just also add to that, if you're maybe alone in your setting, or there's not a lot of you and you've talked it over and maybe you're really similar, I think there's value in finding someone who can speak into those areas of your life that are weak. And we'll talk about this more on Friday. But having someone who you can go to and say, hey, I'm probably not the best at this. Is there something I should be thinking about? Or is there a perspective of this that you can give me that can speak into what I'm facing here right now? We started talking about some tensions. We talked about the tensions that we have, you know, that tension of accepting who we are versus striving to grow and to grow more like Christ, to be more perfect. I'd like to think about one other tension that I think comes up. And it's maybe more of a bigger picture tension, but I think it's one that we all wrestle with in some ways or another. And that's the tension of, we're a Christian school, we're a school. The purpose of the school is academics. We are there to grow learning and to help our students learn. If we were a secular school, that would be our focus, right? You're there to get as much information into these children, to get them learning how to read and help them on their way. But when we enter and add the Christian aspect of it, it changes. And a lot of things change. And I don't know about you, but sometimes we face a little bit of a tension that just is in an overarching way. In our schools, are we too heavy on the academics? Are we church? How do you we instruct, we teach our children, you know, all the way along as you're teaching your classes, you're referencing your walk with Christ because it's integrated all the way through. But do you ever face that tension where, you know, maybe I've spent too much time doing this and maybe I didn't get enough academics done? So I'm just saying, I think they're both appropriate and important, but it's just the tension that's there that we work with and that we live with, and keeping those things in balance. I'd like to pick up a little bit from one point that I left off with yesterday, and as I think of moving ahead and speaking to it just a little bit more, and that is the whole aspect of accepting ourselves or seeking growth. I'm going to try and move through this fairly quickly. But as we think about accepting who we are, as we recognize our own value in who we are in God, this does free us to serve God. It frees us to have a healthy spiritual life, to be spiritually mature, and to effectively minister to others. If we recognize who we are in God, it sets us free from those thoughts and feelings that tie us up in knots and ruin our personalities or create those agendas that we do when we aren't settled with who we are in God, and our motives and those things that incapacitates us in ministry. And I don't know if you've ever worked with people who are, you can tell there's some personal vendetta or something that they're dealing with that's driving them. They haven't reconciled in their own lives. And that can be very damaging in our ministry, and it can be very damaging in our schools. And so coming to a place of accepting who we are in God, I believe is very important in creating a foundation for moving forward. And a lot of the thoughts that I have right away here kind of bounce off a little bit of what I think you might see a few parallels with what Melvin shared this morning. I've found myself just saying amen so many times what he shared. But the need for humility in our lives, in servanthood, if we're to be effective, is very, very important. Continuing on, and I am drawing these thoughts from Marks of Maturity, Biblical Characteristics of a Christian Leader. The biblical concept of self developed out of our concept of God and His grace is important to solid spiritual maturity, to ministry, to our ability to lead others, and especially to our ability to be servants. This contrasts, it's a complete contrast from the world's perspective of self that they are putting out there today. And there's complete polar opposites. Without a biblical concept of self, we end up playing spiritual king of the mountain, I like the way that was stated, and engage in promoting personal agendas to build up our sagging ego. We seek from position, power, and praise that we should be getting from resting in God's grace. Who are you in Christ? If we think about of who we are, we're redeemed by God in our lives. Know your abilities, know your limitations. These come up in a lot of different ways. And as I go along here, I'll be sharing a lot of personal things because that's, I guess, what I know. I want to try to be balanced. But as I understand my own person and who God has made me and the gifts that He's given me, but also the limitations that He's given me, a number of things come to bear and become viewable or visible. One of my weaknesses is being able to accurately estimate how long something's going to take to do. Is there anyone else that maybe has a little bit of that? Okay. And that gets me into so much trouble. Let me just ask for your hands again. How many of you with that trait also end up with a lot of unfinished projects? Okay, so there's some similarities. How many of you those unfinished projects bug you? Okay. And so that's me. That's who I am. And I come across this. We've the last 5 years at school have been kind of a little bit of a whirlwind, as it were. We've done a lot of new things, and I've been involved in a lot of new projects. And I've been working very closely with two project managers. That's what they do for life. And so they keep asking me, give us a list of things that we need to do. And so I make the list and say, oh, that's not going to take too long. And they look at the list and they say, oh, that's a whole day's work. And they're right. I'm wrong. I'm the one that's wrong in that. And so, as I think of us that have this trait, it's good to get a second eye on our projects. For some of us, maybe it's our wives or our husband, depending on who you are. They can look and say, well, that's going to take longer than you think. Some of us, it's maybe other co-workers who are going to say, do you think, we're going to push back and say, do you really think we can pull this off? And then when I stop and think, well, maybe not. Maybe we better wait. And we just don't have the energy. This morning, as speakers, we were given a notification to make sure you get your information into Vivian. And I thought I had emailed the information. And so I just asked her, I said, didn't you get the email? And she said, yeah, I think, there it is. But I want your paper. She wanted the paper. Okay, and my first response was, she's got the information, why does she need the paper? And then my second thought was, Howard, you're not very detail-oriented. She wants the paper because she is detail-oriented and things are going to be in line. And that's a good thing. Period. So I gave her the paper. But that's who we are. Now, how many of you are that detailed person? I know you're out there. And bless you, how many of you are not? Well, there's less of us. But that's actually kind of the beauty of teaching. And I'll get to that a little bit later. But understand your strengths, understand your weaknesses. One area that I think God has given me the ability to do is to not be scared of new things. And well, that gets us into all kinds of troubles too at school. But, and a few of the staff here can agree, attest to that. But we do tackle some big things and try some things. And for me, it's just, well, let's see how it goes. Might not be perfect, but we'll give it a try. And we'll see what happens. And I think we've done some kind of neat things over the last few years that, yeah, if it was just me doing it, we never would have pulled it off. But if there's somebody there to push it, to move it ahead, maybe they will happen. And whereas I know there's staff that have told me, I do not want to try anything new. I'm not the innovator. I'm the one who's going to just tell me what I'm to do, and I will do it well, and I'll do it faithfully. So there's differences there. You need both, and you need to pull together, and you probably will butt heads every once in a while too, but it's an important part of that. Well, understand our sufficiency is always in God. Who are you? If we can come to grips with the fact that I have limitations, let me just back up here for a second. Those of you who put up your hand that you're not detail-oriented, this goes back a little bit to what we said yesterday, you're not detail-oriented, put up your hand, only my co-teacher's putting up her hand. Do you feel that is sin? Now let me flip it around and say, those of you who are detail-oriented, do you think it is sin when somebody isn't? Now you wrestle with that. And that goes back to what I was saying yesterday when I look at our strengths and weaknesses as teachers, and I think they come down in a number of different categories. This isn't easy to think about, I don't think. But I think I'm correct in saying that sometimes those of you who are detail-oriented, do you get really frustrated with us who aren't? I'm sure you do. I know you do. Are you honest enough to say with me, it might be at a point where you say, God help those people. God convict them. I don't know. I just think about that. I don't think it is sin. I think it can be, though. Well, you can think on that one a little bit. I think there can be a time that it is, though. If we're just willing to wallow in it. If I'm just willing to wallow in my uncarefulness and lack of detail, and I'm not willing to even try, I think we can get into areas of character that we should really take a serious look at. As I accept who I am, though, in God, I can stay away from this constant teeter-tottering between fear and pride. if I'm resting in who I am, that insecurity that comes, okay, I'm just coming back to us that aren't very detail-oriented. Do you ever get insecure with that? If you're like me, you do feel it at times. Have you ever thought that you had it all together and then became overconfident and then realized you didn't? We run back and forth on those things. Who we are is in Christ. God has redeemed us. We do not need to be slaves to the opinions of others. We do not need to live or die with the praise of others. Our sufficiency is always in God. How many of you like a compliment? How many of you feed off of those confidence or compliments? Yeah. And I think there's a certain sense where we all do that a little bit. But if we're rested in who we are in Christ, we will not be a slave to that. And that to me is, that's a constant battle for me. Because I do find myself more often than not in my flesh feeding off of the feedback of others as we go along. A couple of verses that have spoken to me. The first one here is very common to understand. For we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. We are his workmanship. So that's Howard's limitation in being very detail-oriented. Part of his workmanship, so I can recognize the gifting that he has given other people who are detail-oriented. First Corinthians 15:10, but by the grace of God, I am what I am. And his grace toward me is not vain. And this is Paul talking here. On the contrary, I worked harder than any of them, though it was not I, but the grace of God that is with me. As I think of Paul talking here, I am what I am. And I hope I'm not taking this verse out of context, but I am what I am. But that second line, I am that I am because of the grace of God to me. But that doesn't mean I just stop there. I continue on. I worked harder than any of them. Though it was not I, it's because of the grace of God that is with me. We are instruments of God. What counts, faithfulness to the use, the opportunities that God gives us, the abilities he gives, and the ministry that he gives us. We want to be like Christ. 1 Corinthians 12, 9 and 10. My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. For the sake of Christ, then, I am content with weaknesses. And I emphasize the word weaknesses. He lists a whole bunch more here. But I am content with weaknesses. I accept the fact that I will have them. Insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities. For when I am weak, then I am strong. God made us who we are. And accepting that, learning that, I think will help us be effective ministers in his kingdom. I'm going to completely shift gears now, if you're okay with that. And I'd like to completely shift gears to take us to actually looking at some of the traits of teachers that I believe are important. Before we necessarily get there, I mentioned a little bit about teacher personality yesterday, and I am going to talk just a brief second about it. How many of you are familiar with the Myers-Briggs personality testing? Okay, some of you are familiar with that, and I'm not here at all to hold any of these up as a be all and end alls. I don't feel that way at all, but I do find there is some interesting or kind of that's interesting things that we can draw from some of these tests. I certainly don't see that they determine necessarily your life or anything like that. But they come up with a lot of different just ways of classifications. And Myers-Briggs tries to classify people basically whether you're an extrovert or an introvert, whether you are a sensing or versus an intuitive person, how do you deal with the information that you get, are you a thinking versus a feeling person, or are you a judging versus a perceiving person? And so they look at some of those things. And it comes up with 16 different combinations of these traits. And I'm just throwing this up quick. We're just going to run through this really fast. The reason I'm bringing this up is, if you were to survey all the teachers of North America, where do you think we'd fall in? Where would we end up? Where would teachers end up? What kind of qualities do teachers? Well, I think the truth is that there's teachers that represent all 16 of those boxes. Okay? There is. And to me, that speaks one thing. And that is, if you don't fall in a certain segment of boxes, you can't be a teacher. No, doesn't mean that at all. And to me, that's where when I look at this test, I say, you know what? It's fine. It's interesting. But it's not going to rule my life. They did a survey of teachers, 800 different teachers. And when they did that, they found that 55% of them did end up in that category as a whole, using the SF characteristics, which is the sensing and feeling characteristic that comes through. 30% of teachers actually nailed that square right there. And that was the profile, but 30% of teachers. But also of interest was that 57% of teachers kind of came out of those boxes as well. Some combination of that. So they mix some things together. That's your standard teacher, I guess, as it were. Basically, the only comment I'm going to say here is these people are, they're your steady people. They're consistent. They carry things through. In Florida, they did a study of the teachers who made the top teacher list in Florida. What are the characteristics? And so what they did is they paralleled this study of 800 teachers with the study of those student or those teachers who were part of this super teacher category. What are the profiles of those teachers? Well, these were teachers that were kind of on the cutting edge. These are the ones that were really making an impact in their classrooms, and they're coming out as being, you know, kind of much different and leading edge. Well, they were there. Those were those teachers. Totally different personality characteristics as a whole. And so, what do I take from this? The bottom line is that I take from this is God is going to use you and your personality for the role he has in your school, how you are. And don't worry about it. And be okay with that. That's what I take from that. I'm going to say a completely switch to the study frame of things. I'm curious, how many of you are familiar with the Commonwealth Teacher Training Study? I thought there might be some people back there in the 20-plus years that maybe came across it. As I was preparing for this talk, I surveyed our teachers. I said, okay, what do you think are the key traits that a teacher needs to have? And we could spend a few minutes here. Of course, I kind of gave you a list already. Maybe you looked at what are the key traits that a teacher needs to have? Well, that was the question that the authors of the study asked. They asked, we're training teachers. We're trying to train teachers and prepare them for the classroom. What traits should a teacher have? And so they surveyed a group of over 90 teachers. You might say that might not be very many, but what they found out is after they got to a certain number, the traits just kept repeating. Okay, so they kind of came to the end of it. And if you want to read the study, you can read all 700 pages of it, which I confess to not having done. And they took these traits and they started looking at them. So there was all kinds of different traits that would come. And they had these actions that teachers do. And they had over 800 of them, different action traits of a teacher. And I said, well, that's a lot of different actions. Can we work with this anymore? So they grouped those actions into 83 traits. And if you look at the first page in the handout that I gave you, you'll see those 83 traits. And I just listed them there for you because I thought they might you might find some value in them. And I also thought that it's a good chance that, let me go here, that it'll be too small for you to read. Anyways, when they were getting these traits together and grouping these things together, they went with certain questions. And there was a lot of administrators that were asked. But they recognize that administrators will probably say some different traits are necessary than parents would. Parents might have a different list of what traits would be necessary. And so they recognize that. So they looked at previous studies that had been done, but then they also did some of their own personal interviewing. And so this is an example of some of the questions that they would go to a teacher and ask. What are the important qualities that a high school teacher should possess? How are they shown? Think of the best teacher among all the high school teachers you have ever known. Why is he or she the best teacher? And so these are some of the questions that they asked. Did he or she have any bad qualities that you had? Can you mention any traits that successful teachers need in high school more than in grade school? So they went through, I feel it was a fairly exhaustive study, and they pulled together these traits. The second part of the study, which I'm not at all going to be referring to, but I think it would be neat for somebody to dig into, is they also quantified all the teacher tasks that they could, things that a teacher does. Now, how many of you think you have a number? They came up with over 15,000. Now you wonder why you're tired today, right? They came up with 15,000. So that was a whole secondary part of this study. But the goal was in developing teachers and how to go into training teachers. Well, they looked at this list here, 83 actions, and they said, this is way too much, way too exhaustive. Or we're not going to be able to work with this list. There's a lot there. So they cut it back to 25. 25 title actions or groups, and some of the others became a part of this list here. And they created their report. Now, what I found interesting about this report is it was published in 1929. And you might ask, well, what relevance does something from 1929 have to 2017? Well, I think there's a number of parallels. Yes, it's from the University of Chicago. It's a secular report. But was the culture of 1929 more or less Christian than it is today? And I think you'd agree with me that it was probably more Christian then. And the expectations for teachers was also higher, especially in the realm of ethics. And so as we look at these things, I think there's some value, or I hope there's some value here for us, as we consider traits that are necessary for a teacher. I talked about going to my staff, asking them, what traits do you think are needed? And, you know, the common ones, how many of you think patience should be in the list? definitely there. You know, the ability to have a sense of what's going on in your classroom, right? You can read that. You know, those are all important things. Which is the most important? If I asked you to group this list by importance, how many believe it's important to be adaptable? Yeah, it's fairly high up that list. So what they did with this study is they ranked the traits. They went back to a group of teachers and say, rank this list of traits. How important are they? What should it be there? And so they ranked them, and this is going to get pretty small. That's why I did make it a handout for you. For kindergarten to grade two teachers, considerateness was right there, right on top. This is an important trait. Enthusiasm, this is important. Magnetism, that sense that of who you are. Neatness, good judgment. These are all in the top five list of traits that are important for this age group. Would you agree with that? I'll let you chew on that. Grade 3 to 6, you notice it changed. And we have a different list as we go down in order. But there's a lot of similarities too. There's a little bit of movement beyond them, but for the most part, there's a lot of similarities. When you start getting into grade 7 to 9, though in grade 10 to 12 is probably where you see the most difference, considerateness dropped way down, grade 10 to 12. I'm not sure I totally agree with that. But as we start looking at these action traits, I'm hoping you get a little bit of a sense of where this study goes. Well, they looked at this and they said, you know what? There is actually just a lot of similarities in how these things are ranked. There's some individual ranking that's different, but there's a lot of similarities. I took the list and I did an average. And I'm going to kind of go from here working off of the average that is listed in these teacher traits. What are the top five traits? Good judgment, self-control, considerateness, enthusiasm. They are important traits. I did put in the blue here are what I would have picked out as anomalies in the list. And so then I have a modified average. I didn't really work with that a whole lot, so it didn't affect things a lot. But if you take out the ranking of 17 for considerateness, modified average for considerateness is actually second, you know, right up there as being a very important trait of a teacher. And so this is the nuts and bolts of this thing, and these are the traits. And you're saying, well, this is great. What does this mean, right? Well, if I could have the ushers hand out the next handout that I have, and maybe you'll need a hand with that. My question was, is there a way that we could have something that could potentially be of use to you and I in evaluating ourselves and understanding and just having us think through some of the parts of understanding who we are as a teacher? And so I'm going to show you, and they're passing them out now. What I did is I took the results. I took the results of the study. All of the traits that they listed, the 83 traits, summarized into 25. And I looked at them and said, okay, how does this parallel for us? So the first trait, adaptability, and just for time, I'm going to go through this right away. So this study is theirs. Please understand it's adapted from them. Please also understand it's 1929. So the wording, the terminology is a lot of 1929. It was fairly targeted to a male audience. So I did try to modify that a little bit, but it's still there, very present. I did go through as I thought of each of these traits. And as I was going through, scripture verses just kept coming. This is so much ingrained into what we want to be as teachers. So adaptability, not that I'm speaking of being a need, for I've learned in whatever situation I am to be content. Paul talking again, I know how to be brought low. I know how to abound in any and every circumstance. I've learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. What does it mean to be adaptable? These were dictionary definitions that they put together at that time point, 1929. How do you define what it means to be adaptable? The ability to make suitable, to fit, to adjust, the capacity of responding to change in external conditions by advantageous modification of structure or conduct. How many of you found page one, or the first trait? I want you to turn there with me. These were the action traits. So this is 11 of the 830 action traits under adaptable. As the teachers said, these are all the things that teachers should be able to do. What I've done is I went through the list and I put a number beside them, 2, 0, 1, and 0. Is there value in looking at yourself on each of these? So, being adaptable. Do you meet the community at their own level? Is that a trait of yours? Is that how you go into your community? Do you meet them at their own level? 2, most of the time. This is what I'm saying. So this is where it gets non-scientific. This is Howard's rendition of this, okay? Check a 2. If that's you most of the time. Check a 1 if it's some of the time. Check a 0 if, and this is, remember when I said before, we have to be honest. The only value of this as a whole is if we're willing to be brutally honest with ourselves And I would almost say maybe you have to be a little hard on yourself. So I went through that and I said, okay, I think for the most part I do. That's me. That's pretty much me. And I'm out of time here. Do I like to be wherever I am? Well, that depends. I'm not always comfortable there. Am I sensitive to the unique positions of the community in regards to faith to practice? Melvin talked about this exact thing this morning. Yeah, I think I do okay with that. Do I make the best of every bad situation? I try to go with the flow. I think I do okay with that. How many of you get all hung up when things change? Okay, so do you understand how you're going to answer these different than me? Do I give up preconceived notions easily? Or am I stuck? Okay. Am I willing to change original plans in emergency? Well, I think most of us say, well, you don't really have a choice. But how do you handle that? When you go into a group, can you just be a part of the spirit of that group? When you're listening or hearing things, do you adapt them to your own needs? How well are you at reading the responses of your children's faces? Do you read them well? Can you see where it's going? Can you see how your lesson's hitting them? Are they with you? Do you read them? Can you adapt to that? How are you at adapting to that? You rate yourself, okay? Where you're at with that. Do you play with children? Now, last week I had more opportunity to play with children than I've had in a long time. I'm not as good with that anymore. I probably did a lot better with it before. And clicking, maybe it irritates me a little bit sometimes, okay? And I've recognized that changing me. Do you adapt to conversations, or do you control conversations? What are you? You know, there's two different people. There's people who lead out in conversation. There's people who adapt. Well, you can do that and go through that. I don't know if you did it now. It'll probably take you 4 to 6 hours to get through this document. Please don't cry now. Once again, this is not scientific. If you add up the number on the left-hand side, there's a potential of 22. If you're all the way on the right-hand side and you went zero all the way down, you're zero. The middle's 11. That's where I came out on that one. Notice that's just kind of an arbitrary line across there. That's maybe who I am. I'm out of time. I'm already 3 minutes over time. To be fair, I need to show you one that's not so nice, okay? But I'll do that tomorrow. Don't feel like you need to do a lot with that, okay? I'm not assigning any homework at this point.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.